Welcome to the RVC podcast, Veterinary Science on the Move. I am Matthias Kleins, and today I will try to elaborate if really everything is well in animal welfare, or if there is still much to explore. The concern for animal welfare is widespread in public and at the heart of the work of veterinarians. By default, we look at the conditions under which animals are kept from a human perspective, but this does not always do animals justice. In order to allow a more objective assessment of animal welfare, with the long-term goal of balancing animal and human interests, Professor Christopher Waters has headed the initiative to establish the Centre of Animal Welfare at the Royal Veterinary College. Here, the focus is to develop rigorous scientific approaches to assess animal welfare and to employ them to improve the conditions under which animals are kept.
Christopher, you recently have started the Centre of Animal Welfare at the Royal Veterinary College based on a BBSRC project grant. Can you tell us a little bit about the overall aims of this project which you will be heading?
Thank you, Matthias. The new Centre for Animal Welfare was established at the Royal Veterinary College in October 2005 to provide a nucleus for research in farm animal welfare at the college. This is a new initiative funded by the Biotechnology and Biological Sciences Research Council to provide underpinning science that will cater for many of the applied questions that face society in terms of farm animal welfare. Not only does the new centre provide this focus for animal welfare research, but it also is acting as a catalyst for new activities in the teaching of animal welfare, outreach in animal welfare, and clinical activities in animal welfare.
One of the problems with animal welfare, which I see when I look at the science which is being done, is that people often seem to judge the state of animal welfare based on personal perception. So they assume that what's good for a human would be good for an animal. I think some of the targets of your research will be to objectivize this view, to try and find fundamental scientific answers to the question of what is good and bad for an animal. Can you give us examples for this?
Yeah. That's a very valid criticism of much of the work that's been done over the last 10, 20 years on the needs of farm animals. Recently, there's been a trend to move beyond the old resource-based measures of how much space an animal has, whether it's got the right temperature, whether the trough length is correct or not, to what's called outcome-based measures. These are measures based upon the animal's needs and wants, what it needs and values in its environment. To give you one simple example, a laying hen has a very strong need for a nest box just in the few hours before it lays its egg, whereas a dust bath, which us humans thought was important for a hen, is not really too valuable. It's not valued greatly by the hen at all.
Could you tell us more about the scientific approaches which people use to actually do something like this?
Well, the simplest test that one can use is a preference test. You give an animal a range of different resources to interact with, to use, and you observe what it's using, how long it's using it for. And so we've done a lot of work ourselves in the past looking at the atmospheric preferences or the light preferences of animals. And to give you a clear example of that, you may be aware that pigs and chickens are kept in atmospheres that have high concentrations of ammonia. And we asked ourselves, does the chicken or the pig mind about this? So we gave both chickens and pigs a choice of atmospheres from fresh air through to a slightly polluted atmosphere. And lo and behold, the chicken does prefer fresh air, as does the pig, but it's also prepared to endure these high concentrations of ammonia for a relatively short period of time. And what it's doing is making short-term choices that are not necessarily in its long-term interests. The reason for this is that the ancestor of the chicken or the pig has not been exposed to atmospheres of ammonia in its past, and so hasn't learned to recognize that these may be potentially hazardous to its health. So, to sum up, give chicken or a pig a choice of different atmospheres. It votes most of the time for fresh air, but some of the time it'll enter these atmospheres that are potentially hazardous. It's not making wise choices. Now, you can move beyond these simple preference tests to making assessments of its motivation to access fresh air. How hard will it work to gain access to clean air?
That's interesting, but I have to say that possibly regarding the current animal husbandry which is being used in farm animal production, I think the animals don't necessarily have this type of choice you're talking about here, but it's rather commercial constraints which determine how animals are being kept. To what extent does your initiative try and address that question, trying to balance the interests of humans and the interests of animals at the same time?
Well, there's the rub of the matter, that livestock farming in Great Britain and the rest of Europe today is under an enormous range of pressures from people concerned with environmental pollution, those concerned with animal welfare, with the economics of food production, to producing food that's safe in terms of microbiological characteristics. And I think the farmer has an especially difficult job to do. One of the projects within the BBSRC programme is concerned with environmental management according to multiple criteria. To give you a concrete example, a chicken farmer has to manage his chickens according to at least three criteria. One is the permissible level of pollutants that he's allowed to emit from his building. Two, to grow the animals to a specified weight, to a defined conformation by a certain age. And three, to ensure that they have healthy legs, which is obviously related to animal welfare, to the welfare of the birds. Managing these three processes of pollution, welfare and production is a tricky business for a farmer. And what we're trying to do in one of our BBSRC projects is to help him with some simple automation to allow him to monitor these processes, to allow him to manage these processes and to do them all simultaneously.
What do you think will be the most successful argument in trying to persuade farmers to acknowledge animal welfare to a greater extent in the future? Because first of all, a farmer will regard the economical restraints, I suspect, but are there potential benefits to the farmer if he increases animal welfare?
That's a very interesting question, and it focuses upon the economics of farm animal welfare in developed countries such as Britain. It's an absolute travesty that the price of a litre of milk is one half to two thirds the price of a litre of bottled water on a supermarket shelves. It shows a rather perverse judgment on the value of water and milk. It would be far better for the dairy farmer to bottle the water that was in the cow's drinking trough than to pass it through the cow. The economics of livestock farming are complex, but at the moment it's very difficult to say that the market in farm animal goods, in animal products, is working efficiently. And the principal reason for that is that animal products are not labelled according to their welfare provenance of the animals that produce them. So that the shopper or the diner in a restaurant who is concerned about animal welfare is unable to make an informed choice because the information is not available on the pack, on the menu, to allow him to make that choice. In the future, I believe that there is a very strong push amongst government, retailers and the producer groups to label products according to its welfare provenance. And once that happens, then the market will begin to work far more efficiently than it does at the moment. But there is another step that's needed, and that is for consumers to be taught how to think rationally, intelligently, logically about farm animal welfare, and that starts at primary school. If children can be taught to think sensibly about the use of animals in society, animals as food, animals in research, in medical research that is, animals as pets, then they will make better decisions when they're adults. And ultimately, that's the mechanism by which the market will operate effectively. Farm animals will be produced in society at a standard that's acceptable to the majority.
So in a way, what you're saying is that we need to equip kids with the ability to resist the messages which some of the marketing departments of great food companies possibly purvey. Because, of course, what we're eating is always eggs from healthy chickens and milk from happy cows, right?
What I don't think we should be doing is telling children what to think. We should be teaching them how to think. Equally, many in society have vested interests, from the retailers to the producers to even the veterinary profession, who make their living out of farming in some cases. And what is needed is for people to sit back and think objectively about the decisions they're making about animals in society, animals as pets, animals as food, etc., so that they can justify them, these decisions, on a proper ethical basis. Once that happens, then the last step, I think, is to have something rather similar to a fair trade policy for British farmers, for European farmers, to that that operates for, say, Colombian coffee growers. Because at the moment, there isn't enough cream on everybody's cake. There's some sectors in the food production chain who get the largest slice of the cake with a big dollop of cream, and there are others who are left with a very small slice with no cream on it at all. And that's because the market is not working efficiently, and consumers aren't in the best position to decide what they wish to purchase in terms of animal welfare goods.
Being a vet myself, I always had the view that I can potentially convince a farmer to implement animal welfare by trying to persuade him that reduced stress in animals will probably ultimately produce a better product, because it might affect the health of the animals in the first place. How big is scientific evidence for that, and could that be used as an argument in the future even more strongly?
That argument has been used in the past, that animals kept under minimal levels of stress are more productive, but it's patently not the whole answer. You only have to look at the prevalence of lameness in dairy cows, which is about 20%, or lameness in broiler chickens, a similar level, or aggressive behaviours such as feather pecking in laying hens or tail biting in pigs. There are too many examples where animals are kept under farming systems that are economically viable, and yet there is a poor welfare. Every year in Britain, each man, woman or child eats on average 13 chickens and a third of a pig. The way society ensures that animals are kept under reasonably humane conditions is by legislation. And after 30 or 40 years of legislation within Europe and Great Britain, there is now a reasonably consistent and satisfactory minimum conditions of husbandry, of farming, that are permissible.
Just the fact that over the last century, potentially, the relative amount that people spend on their food has decreased so much compared to what they earn just explains to you that this progress in making foods and a healthy diet available to more people has been achieved at the expense of the animal or the farming industry.
I think that's a fair comment. Matthias, today I think the figure is the average consumer spends about 12 or 13% of their net disposable household income on food, including expenditure in pubs and restaurants, which is a very small proportion of their budget and a much smaller proportion than the amount they spend on holidays, for example. They have benefited from the low price of food in many ways. But this has been at the expense of a standard of animal welfare that some people find less than acceptable. And it's only by giving people the information about the consequences for animal welfare of the low price of food that you can then expect them to make a different demand on retailers and restaurateurs and others involved in the food chain to raise animals to a higher standard.
Going back to your idea of trying to educate the public better about the needs of animal and animal welfare, do you think that in the same way as it's considered important nowadays to give children the exposure to information technology very early, and should we try and enforce even for children from urban backgrounds that they will have to visit a farm and basically realize that milk comes from a cow and not from a carton?
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I think that the responsible consumer should make the decisions about the purchases that he or she makes in the supermarket or in the restaurant about animal products in full light of the consequences for animal welfare. At the moment, most consumers are quite disconnected from food production. They don't necessarily realise where the milk bottle comes from. In some cases, there is a feeling of guilt among some consumers that in order to eat a pork chop or a sausage or some chicken breast, that an animal has to die. And some consumers choose to remain deliberately ignorant of the detailed aspects of animal husbandry because they don't.
That will make their life much easier, potentially.
Yes. But ultimately, I believe that if you are going to make responsible, ethically justified decisions as a consumer, you need to have the full information upon which to make those decisions. And that's where welfare labelling, where incorporating livestock farming into the national curriculum for citizenship will lead to a more ethically responsible consumer in the future.
It would sound as if for the future you would have a large amount of work in front of you, both scientifically as well as from a policy and educational point of view. Thank you for joining us here today and filling us in on this, and good luck for this work in the future.
Thank you very much, Matthias.
Well, that's it from us this week. I hope you enjoyed the show, and please join us again in 2 weeks when we will be discovering the latest developments in the use of MRI technology in companion animal medicine. In the meantime, if you have any feedback, please send it to podcasts@rvc.ac.uk. Goodbye.